Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome back. Nice to see everyone. And we're moving on tonight to our sixth shiur in the series. The shiur tonight is Lirui Nishmat Chana Bat Carmel and Mordechai Ben Eliyahu and Rachel. Okay. So, last week, if you recall, we learnt about Borer and Dash, selection and threshing. That was last week's. And tonight we're moving on now to two main melachot, big ones as well. And they are the remaining two melachot, which are really involved in the kitchen. Okay, so until now we've done bishul, leaving things on the fire from before Shabbat, shehiya, borer, dash, these are very common things. And we move on to another two main ones, tochen and lash. Tochen means to grind, and lash means to knead. These are the ones which we're going to be discussing tonight, Bezrat Hashem. And then if we got time, I just will say a few words on Me'abed, which is on pickling, which is a very small, minor point. So, let's begin with Tochen. Tochen means to grind, okay? So, as we've said in the past, all the Melachot, which we talk about, are all derived from the Mishkan. In the Mishkan, in order to make the dye, to dye the bottom roof of the Mishkan. The Mishkan has four layers, four roofs, and the bottom layer was dyed. In order to make this dye, they had to take seeds to plow the land, sow the seeds, harvest them, gather them in, select them, and then after selecting them, the good ones from the bad ones, talked about last week, then they would grind them. After grinding it, they would make it into a paste. How they do that, add water to it, okay? And then they would go and bake that and make it into a dye. And so this is the tochen in the Mishkan, the grinding in the Mishkan, that's the reason, the source for it, why it's forbidden for us to grind. Now, it's important to understand that the definition of grinding doesn't mean what we call in English grinding. When we talk about grinding in English, we mean to take a machine and actually grind something into minuscule pieces. That's what tochen does mean, but it doesn't just mean that. Grinding means also any form of making something which is big into very small pieces. So, what about mashing something? Okay, mashing falls also under this. Even though you're not grinding it, but mashing it is also mashing an avocado, mashing a banana, that falls under the prohibition of tochen. It's part of it. And we'll talk about the ways you are allowed to do it on Shabbat in due course. Similarly, mincing something, even if you're not actually grinding it into extremely fine particles, mincing it, chopping it into very small pieces, that's also tochen. The definition of tochen is to take something big and transform it into small pieces, extremely small pieces. Now, what does small mean? So, the Poskim say we don't actually know what small is. And basically, we're told that as long as it's not too small, then that's fine. Okay? We're not exactly sure what small means. As long as something isn't extremely small, that's fine. So, if you think about, for example, a tomato cucumber, Israeli salad, one of those where they're very small, the tomatoes and the cucumbers, that would probably just be on the border, that would still be fine. Although it's small pieces, but it's not minuscule, it's not extremely small. Anything beyond that, okay, even though you're not actually grinding it into tiny particles, nonetheless, you are transforming something big into small, and that is forbidden from the Torah to do so. That's part of Tochen on Shabbat. So, it's not just grinding, it's mashing, crushing, chopping, mincing, all of these all fall under Borer. As long as it's into a small piece, under grinding. That all falls under tochen. Now, just like we learned in Borer last week, that Borer doesn't apply just to edible foods, it also applies to non-edibles. Similarly, tochen can also apply. We're not going to talk about that tonight, it's not so relevant, but grinding can also apply to non-edibles. So, for example, shaving down a piece of wood, it's a small shaving, that's tochen. Taking a big piece and shaving it down. If you crush a clod of earth, of a clod of earth and you crush it into tiny pieces, that's also tochen. Grinding doesn't just apply to edibles, it also applies to non-edibles. Although it's not going to be so practical, but it's just a point to know that it can be relevant if a person's got mud on his garments. We'll talk in the later lectures about how to remove it. But another thing you have to be careful about, apart from cleaning your garments, is also actually grinding it. You know how to grind. It falls under tochen as well. So that's another point to be aware of. So to summarize, this is just a definition of tochen. Tochen is, as we've said, is to grind, to mash, to crush, to mince, to chop into very extremely small pieces. And it also applies to non-edible foods as well. Okay. Now, in the Mishkan, we said everything is the blueprint of everything is the Mishkan. Now, the Mishkan, what did they grind? What did we say before? What was the grinding? It was with seeds. Now, these seeds were non-edibles. They weren't edible. And so, there is a big debate amongst the Rishonim, the medieval commentators, whether Tochen applies to something which is already edible. On the one hand, some argue that Tochen applies to everything. So, for example, carrots. A vegetable which is ready edible. We don't have to cook it. So some say Tochen applies to that as well. Why should it not? If it applies to non-edible foods, like a clod of earth, then why should it not apply to foods which are already edible? Others say no. When it comes to non-edible things, then yeah, Tochen applies to it. But when it comes to food, only if the tochen, the grinding, is making it into something edible. So, for example, it's not possible to eat it as it is. You have to grind in order to make it edible, or if you want to go and cook it. It's inedible in its current state. Only then does tochen apply. But if it's already edible as it is, a piece of carrot, or an avocado, a banana, these are things which are already edible, only then tochen doesn't apply. Something which was unedible, like a beetroot, the Gemara talks about a beetroot, that's something which can't be eaten without cooking it. Grinding that's the problem of tochen. Otherwise, there isn't a problem of tochen. This is a big, big debate amongst the commentators. The final halakha is that it's asur. Tochen applies to even foods which are edible. Okay? So to take a banana, to take an avocado, to take a carrot, even though I could have eaten them themselves, and you could argue that the grinding which I'm doing is not a significant action because anyway I could have eaten it. I'm just making it smaller. I'm not doing a big thing. It's not like something which was inedible and I couldn't have eaten it without grinding it into small pieces. That's tochen. But something like this, it's insignificant. Nonetheless, the final halakha is that tochen applies also to foods which are edible in its current state. And therefore you cannot grind vegetables even if they are already to eat. However, there is another debate. We learned last week, if you remember, with Borer, that selection is mutar if you're doing it for immediate use. Remember we learned that? For immediate use, for the upcoming meal, within half an hour or so. Remember we learned that Borer is mutar. Okay? Now that's written explicitly in the Gemara. What about tochen? Are you allowed to grind for immediate consumption? So this we don't find in the Gemara explicitly, that you're allowed to grind for immediate consumption. And therefore, some say that it's forbidden to grind, even if you're going to eat it immediately, you're not allowed to. Comes along the Rashba from 13th century. Says the Rashba, you know, just like Borer, you're allowed to select for immediate use, similarly Tochen, you're also allowed to grind for immediate use. Why? What's the logic? The logic is that derech achila, it's the way of eating. This is very, very nice svara, very nice logic here. If you're going to eat it immediately, what's the difference grinding it with your hand and eating it immediately to grinding it with your teeth? In your mouth, nobody says that you can't grind, because that's definitely the way of eating. There are no melachot which are forbidden in your mouth itself. Now in your mouth, when you eat a vegetable, you're grinding it in your mouth. That's fine, because it's happening in your mouth. It's derech achila, it's the normal way of eating. Therefore, as long as I am grinding for immediate use, it's fine. Now, this is taken on by many And the final halakha is, with regards to the vegetables, which we talked about, if they are edible vegetables, and you are grinding them for immediate use, you are allowed to grind on Shabbat. Okay? You can crush, you can mash. If you are doing it, something which is already edible, and it's for immediate use. Because both of these points are debatable. And yes, true, we are particular that not to cut vegetables, not to grind vegetables, which are, even if they are edible. But if you're doing it for immediate use, we've just explained, for immediate use it's an extension of grinding with your teeth. Yeah, it's eating, it's an act of eating. And therefore, you are allowed to mash in the regular way an avocado, which you can put out for a salad in the next, in the very near future, in the next half an hour. And like we explained last week, immediate use doesn't have to mean immediately. And even if you have a meal for which is going to take a few hours, as long as it's for that upcoming meal, which is going to be in due course, that's considered immediate use. And therefore, even if it may not be in 2 hours' time, but it's going to be for the meal which is beginning now, that's fine for a person to grind. And so therefore, to summarize, a person may mash, may crush edible foods for immediate consumption in the regular manner. However, this is only if you're crushing and mashing and grinding with things like a fork, spoon, a knife, regular cutlery. To use a specialized instrument, so a grater for example, things which are designated during the week to actually crush and to grind and to mash, that is forbidden rabbinically because of a concept called ovadin dechol, which means this is too, it's related too much to a weekday activity. This, right? These type of instruments have become muktzah because of this rabbinic prohibition. It's too close to something which is done during the week, even though you are grinding something in a permissible way. But since these are typically used for grinding during the week, or ovadin dechol, it's the common weekday activity to grind like this, and therefore you cannot use such an instrument. If you were to do it, it would be forbidden rabbinically, not from the Torah, because as we just explained, from the Torah you're allowed to mash and to crush for the reasons we've explained. But you're not allowed to use, from a rabbinic perspective, you're not allowed to use a specialized instrument. You have to use something like a fork or a spoon that you are allowed to mash and to grind. Any questions on that? Is that clear? Yeah?
About immediate use.
Clear?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what about foods which don't grow from the ground? Okay, so we've said that tochen applies both to edible and non-edible foods. But we've been talking about vegetables, things which grow from the ground. And in the Mishkan, what was the tochen for? For seeds. Seeds from the ground, right? Does tochen apply to foods which are edible, let's say, but are not from the ground, are not gidulei karka? What's a typical example? Meat,
fish.
Chicken, fish, eggs. Right? These are all things which don't grow from the ground. Does tochen apply to that? Because remember, the blueprint is always the Mishkan. We don't have to be really thinking about melacha, we're thinking back to the Mishkan. In Mishkan, seeds we used. Seeds grow from the ground. Wheat, these types of things, tochen applies to. Vegetables. Things which grow from the ground, that everyone agrees tochen applies to. Does it apply to foods which don't grow from the ground? Again, there's lots of discussion with these points, and this point as well is also a big debate, a big machloket in Rishonim. And the final halakha is, again, we make a hybrid of two opinions. And we say, if something doesn't grow from the ground, and it's already edible, so it's cooked meat, cooked fish, cooked chicken, then tochen doesn't apply to it. And you're allowed to. Even not for immediate use. For immediate use, we said, you can grind even vegetables which grow from the ground. Here what we're saying is, even if it's not for immediate use, since it's already edible, and it's something which doesn't grow from the ground, we have two opinions here, which some would say in both cases are permissible, some would say in both cases are not permissible, but together, two doubts, two opinions together, therefore we say, that it's mutar one is allowed to actually grind something which is edible and doesn't grow from the ground. Okay? And that's even not for immediate use. So an egg, for example, there is no problem in the slightest in mashing it on Shabbat, even if you're doing it for an hour's time, for 3 hours' time. From Friday night for the next morning, it's also fine. Because it doesn't, tochen doesn't apply to it. Again, you wouldn't be able to use a specialized instrument, that we've said already. Whenever tochen is mutar, it doesn't mean you can actually go and take a grater or a mincer or a chopper. And of course, an electrical machine, of course not. Right? But even a manual one, you're not allowed to use a one which is designated for grinding. I should say though, an egg slicer, the poskim do say, an egg slicer is fine to use. Because an egg slicer, the whole reason you can't use a specialized instrument is because normally it's used for grinding during the week. So things like a grater without crushers, but an egg slicer isn't used to grind, an egg slicer is used to slice. Right? And slice eggs. Things which are always never part of tochen. And therefore one is allowed to use an egg slicer, and it's not even mukta. One may use an egg slicer on Shabbat, even for not immediate use for the reasons we've just discussed. Let me just say a couple more points, then we'll take questions on tochen. And by the way, one may also use a chopping board as well. You can use a chopping board. You can cut with a knife or a fork on a chopping board. There's no problem with that. Only within the chol, using an actual instrument, that one can't do. Now, there's another heter, there's another way, another scenario when tochen doesn't apply. And that is the principle of en tochen achar tochen. This means, when something has already been ground, the one may, and it's then returned back to a lump again, one may then grind it again. So what's a typical example of this?
Flour,
you know, wheat, okay, let's take wheat for an example. Wheat, you can't grind that on Shabbat. It's a sort of grind on Shabbat wheat, okay? Okay, that's non-edible, that grows from the ground. That's definitely a sort of grind on Shabbat wheat. But wheat is transformed to flour. What do you then go and use flour? You're going to make it, you're going to make bread with it. You're going to make biscuits with it, make a cake with it. Can I take a piece of bread and, with my hand, or a piece of cake, with my hand crush it into tiny, tiny, tiny pieces? Can I do that? Seemingly that's tochen. Right? One may do it. Why? Because en tochen achar tochen. Since it's already gone through the process of grinding, true it's now been reshaped and been reformed again into a piece of bread, into a biscuit, into a cake, but since it's already the actual flour particles within it, have already been through the grinding process, therefore tochen doesn't apply to it, and one may grind it again on Shabbat. Therefore, all these types of things, a person may, even again for, not for immediate use, immediate use, anyway, would be muta. We're talking about even for a good few hours later, one may, tochen doesn't apply in such a scenario. Now, one final point, and then we'll summarize. There is an exceptional heter, an exceptional allowance. Normally we say, when a person does any of the 39 melachot with a shinui, shinui means you do it in an unusual manner. So, a person who carries on Shabbat, for example, in an unusual way, let's say in his shoe he carries something, that's forbidden only from the hachamim. Whenever you want to be liable by the Torah, then you have to do it in the usual way. Do it in an unusual manner, it's only asur mid rabbanan. There are some things though, which are so unusual, that the Gemara itself says, Chachamim allowed it, gave a total dispensation to it, because it's so unusual, so different. And the Gemara tells us, this is brought down the halakha, that mashing with the back of cutlery, the back of a knife, it's called kata de sakin, the back of the knife, that is such a shinui, that's so unusual, that's mutar straight out. Even for non-edible foods. Even if it's not for immediate use, right? Even if it's something which grows from the ground. Because you're using the back of a knife, one may grind, one may mash, one may crush in such a manner, even for later on Shabbat.
You mean
okay?
Handle?
And sorry?
Do you mean the handle?
The handle, the back, yeah. And sorry, the back, I don't mean, I mean the back, I mean the handle, exactly. Yeah? Talking about the handle of a knife. One may mash with that, the handle, yeah? And so the avocado, for example. Let me give a few practical examples, then we'll take questions. Let's take a few practical examples. Let's say I want to mash avocado for the meal which I'm about to eat now. Okay? Am I allowed to do that?
Yes.
Why?
Because it's fermented juice.
And it's an edible.
And it's already edible.
Okay? Fine. Fermented juice and those two points together. Can I crush a beetroot, a non-cooked beetroot for immediate use?
No.
Okay, better not to. Can I mash an avocado for Souda Shel Ishit in the morning? Or Friday night, can I prepare the avocado for the next morning?
No.
Can I mash it? There's no way of me doing it?
With the back of the knife, yeah.
And you have to do it with the handle. See? Yeah. If you're doing it for immediate use, you don't have to use it. But if you're doing it with a great shinui, a great different manner, then you can do it even for later on Shabbat. That's mutar, there's no tochen, doesn't apply to that. A piece of fish, which has been cooked piece of fish, can I grind that on Shabbat? Can I grind it on Shabbat in the usual way?
Yeah.
For now or for later on in the afternoon?
Both.
Hmm?
Both.
Yeah, both, even for later on. Okay, because it's already edible and it's cooked, therefore, Tochen does not apply to it. Again, these examples were given, you mustn't use a specialized instrument. A banana is the same thing what we said. A salad as well, cutting into extremely small pieces you want to cut, then you have to be careful. Don't be doing it for immediate use and the vegetables are edible, then there would be no problem with that on Shabbat. So to summarize all of Tochen, we explained what Tochen is, the definition of Tochen, and it's used in the Mishkan. Then we explained that one may grind if one is grinding something which is edible and it's for immediate consumption. Similarly, we said one may grind something which is edible and it doesn't grow from the ground. That's even if it's not for immediate consumption. We also said that one may grind something which has already gone through the grinding process. So biscuits, cakes, one may grind that. And in all circumstances, a person may mash with the handle, with the back of a fork, back of a knife, one may mash with something like that. That's all fine. Okay, any questions?
To clarify one thing, cutting duck, and I know it's debated what duck is, but let's say it's really extremely, extremely small. Can you do it for immediate use?
For immediate use?
For the next half an hour.
Of course you can. Of course, that's the whole point we're saying. If it's not small pieces, then anyway you could do whatever you want. The point is, even if it's extremely small, it's actually tochen, you're mincing with a knife, not with a mincer.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, extremely small,
yeah.
But you have two specs, you have a specs figure. Number one is, does tochen apply to edible foods? And even if not, midal chazak rashba, that means it's consumption mutar, together with matir lechatchila.
Immediate meal.
Yes,
meal, yeah.
For the meal coming up.
Yeah.
Then you can do even extremely small, you can mince into tiny pieces. Yeah, that would be, yeah. Because that's something which is designated for anything which is, its purpose is to crush during the week, and that can't be used on Shabbat. And not just can't be used, it's actually mukta. Because of this prohibition, it can't be used, and hence it becomes mukta, shouldn't be moved on Shabbat.
Rabbi, you mentioned the egg slicer. Does that mean that a peeler is allowed? Because I always thought it wasn't. To peel cucumber or something like that.
The other form would be muborer, not tochen. Because you're just selecting with the peeler. But I'll tell you something about it afterwards. That's the main halakha. One final point in relation to tochen, which is unrelated to foods, which is an interesting point that we should be aware of. There is, according to some, a prohibition of making noise on Shabbat. Yeah? Prohibition of making noise on Shabbat. Or allowing something to operate on Shabbat by itself, which makes noise. Typically in the olden days, the windmill. So, can you put wheat in the mill before Shabbat and allow it to operate, and it happens by itself? Haven't we said in the past a few times, anything you do normally, you do before Shabbat, if it happens by itself during the course of Shabbat, it's fine. We said you can leave your hose on and waters your garden over Shabbat. So can you put the wheat in the mill and it, over the course of Shabbat it crushes? Why not? You haven't done anything yourself, and therefore there shouldn't be any problem. Nonetheless, some say that there's a prohibition of Hashma'at Kol, something which makes a noise on Shabbat, and people don't know. A host, for example, is in your back garden, is not making a great noise. If you did it for Shabbat, it's fine. Something like a mill, which is going to make a noise, and it's going to be evident to people that this is actually operating on Shabbat, something like that is forbidden because people may think you've operated it on Shabbat itself. What's the common, the practical application of this today? A washing machine. Can you put your washing machine on timer from before Shabbat and allow it to, let's say, come on 2 hours before the end of Shabbat, you put it, after Shabbat finishes, you put it in the dryer. I have to do that. For us, it's mutar to do that. There's no problem in the slightest, fashion of making of things which operate by themselves. One may use a washing machine and to wash over the course of Shabbat. It may not necessarily be in the spirit of Shabbat, but if it's somewhere in you know, in the cupboard or somewhere like that, it's not going to disturb your Shabbat, then there's no reason why a person, if he wants to. Ashkenazim don't. Ashkenazim take on the opinion of what I said before. There's a problem of making noise, and it's evident that, it's evident that something is happening in the house, and one may suspect that you've operated on Shabbat, and therefore forbidden. But for us, it's fine, and anything which makes noise on Shabbat is mutar. The Poskim talk about an alarm clock. When the alarm clock came out, some forbade it. They said, because it comes on Shabbat morning, then how do you know that you operated it on, maybe did it on Shabbat? But they say, no, everyone uses an alarm clock today. Why? Because the essence of an alarm clock is that you put it on at a different time. Right, that's the essence of an alarm clock that you put on at a different time to wake up. Therefore, everyone says an alarm clock is fine. But you see how far the concept goes, and this is why, for example, some poskim forbid using a television on Shabbat because of this idea. Even if you switched it on before Shabbat, right, it's making a noise, and therefore, if you follow this opinion, it'll be forbidden because of this reason, not to use a television on Shabbat. That brings us to the end of Tochen. Now move on to Lash, the second big melacha for tonight. Lash means to knead, okay? To bind it together. And this is an extremely complex melacha, but I'm going to bring it down, make it as simple as possible, and share with you something in the end. So, as we said, after they would grind the seeds, they would then add water to it, make it into a paste, and that paste then would then go and boil and make it into a dye. Now, the definition of lash is to bind together particles. That's what lash means. The definition of lash is to bind together particles using a liquid. It doesn't have to be water. It normally is water, but you can use oil, you can use vinegar. And the definition of lash is to bind together small pieces, small particles, and make them into a unified mass. That's what lash means. The typical lash is you're making bread, you're making a dough, right? You have the wheat, gone through tochen, and then you add water to it, and you mix it together, you make a dough, you make a unified mass. That is what you need to be thinking about when you think of lash. Lash means to take separate entities, separate particles, add them together, and make a unified mass. That's the definition of lash. Now, it has to be that it unifies and it binds them together. So making a sandwich, for example, isn't a problem. It doesn't fall under this. No problem with that. Because you're not actually binding together little particles. Yeah? That's clear. That's the definition of lash, to bring together small things and put them together. Now, let's talk about making a dough. That's a very good example, and we're going to use that to understand what happens with lash. So you want to make a dough. So what happens? You have wheat. And you put water in. Now, after you put water in, you don't just leave it. What you do is you actually, you knead with your hands. You knead. You wouldn't be able just to take the wheat, the particles of wheat, put the water in, and then just leave it to become a mass, to become a unified entity on its own accord. You need your input. Okay? Obviously, the actual act of kneading, of mixing together, obviously that's lash. The major question is, what about if I put together the two things and I leave them of their own accord? to mix together, to mingle together. Is the putting in of the ingredients, is that also a forbidden aspect of lash? Or is it only when you do the actual act of kneading? So, let's say I put together the wheat and the water half an hour before Shabbat. And then when Shabbat finishes, then I start to knead. Okay, leaving aside the issues of preparation. That's a minor point of, you know, we're talking about the main biblical prohibition of lash here. Is that, and it's important we get clear this, because it'll make a big difference soon. Is the prohibition only the act of kneading itself, the mixing, the putting it together, or is it actually putting the ingredients together that itself begins the kneading process, begins the mingling, and hence is asur because of lash? Do you see the question? Okay, this is mahloket in the Gemara between two Tanaim, two rabbis in the Mishnah, which goes on for some time, and this mahloket continues all the way down till the contemporary poskim, actually, all the way down. So Rishonim talk about it, Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah talk about it, Ben Yishchai and the Ravadi talk about it, all the way down. And the halakha, that tonight we're going to discuss the Ashkenazim as well, because this is a very important part. The halakha for us, Faradim, is that, like the Shulchan Aruch says, that he follows the opinion in the Gemara, which is also the opinion of the Rif and the Rambam, that only the actual act of kneading itself is prohibited. Putting together the two ingredients, if you don't actually go and mix it, there's nothing wrong with it. And you may be thinking to yourself, who cares? You know, who's going to do this? It's very important. This can be extremely important. I'll show you why soon. But according to Shulchan Aruch and according to Asfaradim, the problem is only the actual act of kneading, not putting the ingredients together. Putting the ingredients together is fine. The problem is kneading it and mixing it together. Ashkenazim follow the opinion that both acts are forbidden by the Torah. Actually, just putting them together to mix, that's forbidden. And going on and kneading it is also forbidden. Both are two aspects of the melacha of lash, and each one is equally forbidden. Each one is equally forbidden. Now, before we move on, we have to explain another point, and that is, there are two types of masses that you can make. And they refer to, the first one is Bilila Ava, the second one is Bilila Rakak. Bilila Ava means a thick, dense mixture. Something like a dough, which if you turn over the container it's in, it will be very difficult, it won't move out, and if it does, it'll move very, very laboriously, very slowly it'll come out. That's a thick, dense, solid mixture. That's called Bilila Ava. And to make such a mixture is forbidden by the Torah. That's a proper lash, that's the wheat, the water, that's a proper mixture. The second type of mixture is called Bilila Raka. That's when you make a semi-loose mixture. Something which, when you pour, it will travel out slowly, it will come out. I'm not talking about something which is very runny. Something which is very runny, that's not called lash. Remember, the definition of lash is to knead things together. If you pour it out and it just comes out, there's no mixing there in the first place, right? Lash means either a thick, solid, dense mixture or semi-loose mixture, something like that. That would be forbidden only by the Chachamim. And this distinction is very important. So what have we said so far, before we come to the practical points, is that lash has two distinct elements. It has the first part of mixing the ingredients together, and the second part of the kneading. Sfaradim follow the opinion that only the act of kneading is forbidden. Putting together the ingredients is permissible. Ashkenazim follow the opinion that even the act of putting the ingredients together is prohibited. And we've explained there are two types of mixtures, two types of masses you can make. You can make a very thick mixture, that's asur from the Torah, and you can make a semi-loose mixture, which is asur from the Chachamim. Now, we said in Tochen that sometimes you can have the exceptional heter that something which you do with an unusual, very unusual manner becomes permissible. And we find the same concept in Lash again. even though kneading is prohibited, if a person kneads in an unusual manner, it makes it permissible. What's the method given in the Talmud? The Gemara says the way to do it is shti va'erev. Shti va'erev means a cross. Yeah, that means crisscross strokes. The normal way you mix something is you do it in a circular fashion. You go around. When you knead, when you mix crisscross, shti and erev, like that, taking out a spoon each time in between. Something like that is so unusual that that is permissible to do on Shabbat. You're allowed to mix with crisscross strokes on Shabbat itself. Almost everything, there's one exception which I'll talk about soon. But almost everything you can mix in such a manner on Shabbat. However, pay attention to this. Because using crisscross strokes, okay, when are you employing this shinui? When are you doing it? When are you doing it? During the act of kneading. During part two. So if the problem of lash is only the act of kneading, then there's no issue. I can put the ingredients together. That's fine, we've said. You don't have to knead on Shabbat. But if you knead in this non-circular fashion, shti and erev crisscross, that's fine. That'll be mutar.
Even if it's a thick.
Even if it's a thick one. Even if it's thick. Because this is a huge shinui, which makes it permissible totally. If, however, you hold like the other opinion which we said, that there's a problem not just with the act of kneading, but also with putting the ingredients together, it's not going to help to do a shinui, to mix differently. Because the actual act of putting the ingredients together is in itself an issue. This shinui of mixing crisscross will only help you if you mix the ingredients together before Shabbat. Then it's already mixed, then you can do the kneading with the crisscross strokes on Shabbat itself. But you can't actually go and put it in and mingle them and put the ingredients together on Shabbat. You see with me? Right? This is why it's so important which opinion we follow. Because the heter, the special shinui which we have, only applies to the actual act of kneading, the actual act of mixing, not putting the ingredients together. And therefore, if the problem is only the act of kneading, then one may knead on Shabbat in this unusual manner. If, however, the problem of lash is also putting the ingredients together, then you can't do that. So therefore, for that reason, if you didn't mix the ingredients together, for the Ashkenazim, they can't make such a mix, they can't make a thick mixture on Shabbat. Something with a dense and a solid constitution, you wouldn't be allowed to make it on Shabbat, because how are you going to put the ingredients together? If you put the ingredients together before, then that would be fine. But on Shabbat itself, you wouldn't be able to do that. For us though, you can put the ingredients together as long as you need in this unusual manner. There are exceptional cases in which even the Ashkenazim rely on our opinion. So for example, for a child, they allow, the way we do it. Okay, or for a sick person, something like that. Under usual circumstances, they machmir. However, I'll say one more point for the Ashkenazim, and it's important we understand this, is that we explain the difference between a thick mixture and a loose mixture. A semi-loose mixture, we said, is forbidden from the Chachamim. They forbade it because it's too similar to a thick mixture. Now, when a person makes a thin mixture, semi-loose one like we've been talking about, which is forbidden rabbinically, and even a very small shinui, even a very small difference, can make it permissible. Because the whole idea is that forbidden rabbinically shouldn't be similar to normal kneading. If you make a tiny difference, it's permissible. Therefore, if you're making a belila rakah, if you're making a thin mixture, then as long as you cut in the ingredients in an unusual manner, that's enough to allow you to make a thin mixture for the Ashkenazim. So they can never make a belila avah, they can make a thick mixture. Because there the only shinui which permits the actual act of kneading is the crisscross strokes. It only helps in the kneading, not in putting the ingredients together. But a semi-loose mixture, which is forbidden rabbinically, just the act of putting the ingredients into the container in a different manner, that makes it permissible. And this is why you see people putting in things in a different, in the usual. So if, for example, you want to mix egg with oil, right? So let's take egg with oil for an example. Can you mix it on Shabbat? Let's leave mayonnaise for a moment and we'll see why soon. But can you mix eggs, can you make an egg salad on Shabbat? Egg paste on Shabbat? So, you've crushed the egg. Are you allowed to crush the egg? We've said you can crush the egg, so that's fine. Okay? So you have the egg, you have the oil. Can you squeeze the grape, the olives for the oil on Shabbat?
No,
no.
Directly.
That's for, huh? Well, that's what it is. Yeah, you're right. Direct onto the fruit we can. Generally speaking, your olive oil, olive oil will be ready from before Shabbat, yeah? So you have your oil and your egg. Now, can you mix them together? So, putting them together, straight away mingling begins. The act of mixing together begins straight away, which we say is fine. Can you then go and mix them together? So then you'd have to do crisscross strokes. That'd be fine. That's the way we would do it. However, for Ashkenazi, the actual act of putting the two ingredients together isn't allowed. And therefore, what you would do, what you would need to do, it wouldn't be enough just to put in the ingredients in the wrong way and then make a thick mixture. That wouldn't be permissible. What you need to do is put the ingredients in the wrong way. So normally, you would put in the egg and then the oil. So here what you do is put in the oil first and then the egg, and make a semi-loose constitution, only for the rabbinically, and that with this minor difference that permits it. But this minor difference isn't going to allow a thick constitution. And therefore, if Ashkenazi wants to make a really thick, and solid, and unified, dense egg paste on Shabbat, that has to be done from before Shabbat, or made into not such a dense mixture on Shabbat itself. Okay, so that's, do we get, is everyone with me with this point? Yeah? Two further points, and then we'll go through a few practical examples, because it can be complicated, a few practical examples. Two further points. One point is, and this, unfortunately, isn't so well known, it's important we're aware of this. Now, which we've said until now, that there's no problem in putting together ingredients, even if they mingle together, as long as you do a shinui, a difference in the actual act of mixing, that's only things where the unified mass doesn't come about by itself. So the example we've given just now is the egg and the oil. You put them together, it begins to mingle. But it's not actually going to unite unless you yourself have put some input into it. Wheat and water. You put the wheat and water together, it begins to mingle. But it's not actually going to turn into a dough until you actually knead it together.
Why you keep using the word wheat? Do you mean wheat or do you mean flour?
Ground wheat. Yeah? So, flour and water. Yeah, that's okay. So, flour and water together. Now, what was I saying? Flour and wheat together? Yeah. However, some things, when you just actually add the two things together by themselves, they mix and they become a unified mass by themselves. What's an example of that? Think of a Weetabix.
Weetabix and milk.
Yeah, it's a very good example. Weetabix. If you have Weetabix, you put a bit of milk. Not a lot, you put a bit of milk. As soon as you put the bit of milk into it, not only do they mingle, but straight away it actually makes the particles of the Weetabix become unified together. If you put in a lot, then it's probably not going to happen. If there's a lot of milk, much more than the Weetabix. If you're putting in a relatively small amount, then that milk gets absorbed by the Weetabix, and by itself unites the particles of the Weetabix. So by itself, the lash is happening. Then, even according to us, that would be a problem. Because the whole reason that we hold that you're allowed to mix the greens together is because the main act of kneading is the actual mixing together. That's the problem. As long as you mix with the shinui, with the crisscross, then that's fine. If, however, it's happening by itself, then that's asur to do on Shabbat. And so that's what we should be careful. Anything which happens by itself, one should be careful with. One final point is that adding water into something normally will be permissible, because the definition of flesh is to unify something. When you're making it thinner and looser, that's almost always going to be permissible. Right? When you're adding in more water, so let's say tahina. Right? Tahina, which is somewhat solid, you want to add in more liquid, that's fine, because you're actually making the constitution looser, and that's permissible to do on Shabbat. Now, as you can see, it's quite a complicated topic, this. So, a couple of years ago, I compiled some common practical questions and examples of flash. And thank you, Mark, for printing them. So if you just want to pass them around, and we'll just go through a couple of them, just for example. So let's just read from the top. We'll just go through two or three examples and then we'll end. But you're welcome to take this home if you wish. So, blila ava, that's what we said, is a thick, dense mixture. Such a mixture is either too thick at all, even when the bowl is tilted, or will move only very slowly and laboriously, e.g. dough. Blila raka is a semi-loose mixture, loose consistency, and is loose enough to be poured easily when the bowl is tilted. Think about the next paragraph. Okay, go to crisscross strokes. One should take out the spoon each time before changing from one direction to another. So, one vertical, horizontal, vertical, horizontal, that's crisscross. So let's take an example of tahina. Let's go through that, and we'll go through another two examples or so. So, to make actual tahina, so mixing ground sesame seeds with water, it's forbidden from the Torah. Why? Why can't I mix them together in an unusual manner? Sesame seeds with water. That's how you make tahina. Hmm?
You're making something, you're forming something.
You're changing the state.
Okay, but I'm allowed. It's already ground sesame seeds. Okay, already ground from before Shabbat. I'm mixing sesame seeds with water.
Why can't. Excellent.
Because it unifies itself. It happens by itself. As soon as you put sesame seeds in with water, by itself, it unifies and becomes into one mass. So that's like the wheat of it. Something like that doesn't help to mix the. But the tahina which you buy from the shops, almost always, has already had water mixed to it. You're not actually taking sesame seeds and adding water to it. You do have to add water to it to make it looser, but that's the opposite of flash, and that's fine. Right? We're talking about, let's move on to number two, the next bullet point. Ready-made tahina which is edible, but one wants to loosen its consistency, one may add water. Okay? Next bullet point. Ready-made tahina that's too thick and dry to be edible. So then, sometimes there, adding the water actually makes it unifies it. It's so thick it's unedible. Adding in the water makes it edible, and therefore you should mix it in with crisscross strokes, etc. Let's move on to the aubergine salad. Yeah? So, you want to make an aubergine with oil, for example. You want to mix them together. It's a very thick mixture. It's going to be difficult to do that, but imagine. Do a very thick one. So, we said you can't do that on Shabbat because the mixing together itself is forbidden. But we are allowed to, as long as you mix them with crisscross strokes. And similarly, the bila raka, like we said before, if we move on to the next paragraph, put in the oil first and the aubergine. As you change the order of the ingredients, that's fine. If you just move on to the next page, number 7, this is a common one. eggs with onions and oil or mayonnaise, or liver with oil and mayonnaise, or tuna with oil and mayonnaise, the result is usually a very thick mixture. That's normally the case with these types of things. It becomes a thick mixture. And therefore, for us Faradim, if you have a look in the third bullet point, even with just mix it with crisscross strokes for us, you can put together the oil with the liver, oil with the egg, oil mayonnaise, and just mix them together in a crisscross way, because the mingling together is fine. The problem is the kneading. As long as you knead in crisscross strokes, you're fine. Which goes into a different, like we were saying, we won't go through it. But the main thing we need to understand for us, almost always, if you just knead, you just mix it together in crisscross strokes, it will be fine. However, if you go to the next page, number 12, okay, Weetabix and porridge, highly absorbent stuff, things like that. So then, I've written, one must pour in a large amount of milk, so the resulting mixture will be runny and loose. And then you mix it in, the milk, into the Weetabix with crisscross strokes. But you can't just pour in a little bit of milk, because then that will straight away become absorbed by the Weetabix and become unified of its own accord. And therefore, that is prohibited. And number 14, on a separate point, one is allowed to make jelly, provided there are no bishul issues. One may make jelly on Shabbat. So that brings us to the end of Lush. As you can see, it's quite a complex issue, but generally speaking, for us to put it very, very simply, to summarize what we've said tonight with regards to Lush, almost everything, the final halakha for us is, as long as you mix it in an unusual way, as we said, the crisscross strokes, shtiva erev, then one may basically mix together almost everything, even on Shabbat itself. So to summarize what we talked about tonight, we talked about tochen and Lush, grinding and kneading. We explained when tochen is mutar. We also explained when lash is mutar. And basically, when a person kneads, as long as it's with a big shinoi, one may mix things together on Shabbat. One final point is with regards to pickling, one should be aware that pickling is forbidden on Shabbat. One's not allowed to pickle things. You can't put cucumber in pickling liquid. Sometimes you have a pickle jar, right? You can't put a cucumber in there. That begins the pickling process. The reason you don't have to pickle on Shabbat, anyone know why you don't have to pickle on Shabbat? No.
Okay.
Huh?
Okay.
Yeah, good.
No.
Sorry? That's two, very good. Two opinions. Okay, excellent. Okay, so one opinion is that it looks like cooking. It's definitely forbidden rabbinically. Something about picking to either it looks like it's a form because you're changing the texture, or like tanning as well. When you change the leather, you also here you're changing the texture of the thing. Same idea. But in any case, it's forbidden to pickle. And one should be careful of things like cucumber from putting salt onto it and leaving the salt for a long time there. So on salt and cucumbers, these types of things, and not eating it immediately, one should be careful, at least pour oil or something which neutralizes the effect of the salt on the cucumber. Good. Next week is Hanukkah. So we're going to take a break for Hanukkah. The following week we'll also have a break. And then we will resume on the 18th of December. In 3 weeks' time. So we're going to have two Tuesday nights we're going to have off. And we'll resume on the 8th of December. But then we're going to learn about four melachot, which are out of the kitchen now. So we're going to be talking about Choresh plowing. So for example, walking with football stars, walking with high heels, making holes in the ground, it's a form of plowing, these type of things, can you do that? Playing marbles on the ground on Shabbat, playing football on the ground on Shabbat. Zoreah will talk about that, planting on Shabbat. What about putting flowers in a vase? You bought flowers for Shabbat, you didn't have a chance, but then somebody gave you a gift on Shabbat, can you put flowers into the water on Shabbat? Then we'll talk about cutting trees, harvesting, and using trees. Are you allowed to climb a tree on Shabbat? Are you allowed to relax in a hammock which is suspended next to a tree? And gathering in things on Shabbat. That will all be, please go on the 18th of December. There'll be one final show before you break up for the winter holidays. Then we'll resume again the beginning of January.
Well,
good.
You said about not making noise on Shabbat. Can you have a radio on that comes on a timer?
Strictly speaking, yes. It's not advisable, though.